shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three distinct
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing there but blackness and these three amber orbs. The top orb started to dim as if on a dimmer switch. It didn't budge at all.
The people who saw the lights will say the lights were orange, they were bright, and they were big, and they were like nothing they've ever seen before. And there's been no official explanation.
This didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and that was the soundtrack of The Phoenix Lights, a great documentary by Dr. Lynn Kitai, an award-winning documentary for sure. And we have Dr. Kitai on the phone, and we'll be talking to her about the 10th anniversary today, March 17th. Well, Dr. Lynn, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years. How are you?
Absolutely. I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on.
Let's talk. We're going to talk about a lot of things. You're doing all kinds of media events here on the 10th anniversary, including on Sunday night. You got a little shot here on somebody who's pretty well known.
I think it's a first. Apology on the Geraldo Rivera Geraldo at large. Actually, I'm going to be whisked away on Sunday. We're actually screening our internationally award-winning documentary, The Phoenix Lights. Not alone. At the Harkin Shea Theater, the last couple years have been sold out houses for all three shows. And we're so proud. I mean, it's amazing that we've accomplished what we've accomplished in such a short time, and especially with this genre, to have won over a dozen international film festival awards. But I'll be whisked away after the second show to a satellite feed, so it's a live feed for the Geraldo show.
Well, you're an old hand at media, so you can handle all that.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and it's very ironic, to be sure, that for the last 30 years I have dedicated my life's work to community education, and particularly for children in schools, curriculum being distributed by Discovery Education and all that good stuff, but, and health reporting for NBC and USA Cable, which kind of prepared me for this. I you know, my son, my younger son, who was a neurology resident, was the only person who read my 750-page journal after I pushed my entire professional life aside for 4 years to find a logical source and meaning for what we had witnessed and photographed, both up close and personal, very close sighting in 95. My husband, who is also a physician, I had no interest or knowledge in this at all, and witnessed the three amber orbs, actually a little below us, who live high on a mountain, tucked in the mountain range, with a panoramic view of the city skyline. So we know what pops up out there, be it planes or helicopters or streetlights or car lights or flares. We're quite familiar with all those things, and this was very, very different and very close to our home. And then 2 years later, after I had gotten pictures, didn't know what the heck this advanced technology was doing above a private gated area, the lights came back again 2 months before the mass sighting, which I happened to catch the same phenomena in the same location. This is really important data. I mean, it's either been dismissed or ignored for since I came forward 3 years ago by some. But the point is that I have pictures that prove I caught this thing head on turning into a V-shape. And was so unnerving. It was a gigantic formation over a mile wide, you could see, and it was so unnerving that the next morning I called around to see if anyone had seen it and could give me an explanation, and found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport, saw the same thing, did not show up on radar, was in restricted airspace in front of the mountain range over Phoenix, and in their own words, when they took a look with binoculars, there were 6 points of light. Massive span, over a mile wide, equidistant from each other, that was moving slowly in tandem behind South Mountain. And when I asked them what it was, it beats me. And, you know, I said, well, you're air traffic controllers, and you didn't know what it was. And we kept in contact, and I continued taking pictures up until including March 13th. When a mile to 2 mile wide formation of these lights, V-shaped formation, and different people actually saw different things. So we're not sure if it was a parade throughout the state of many different objects, because some people saw a boomerang shape, some people saw a crab, some people saw these lights that seemed to be attached to something. Many people had to go right over their heads. I mean, this thing traversed the entire state of Arizona. This is really important to note. And glided at very low altitude, about 30 miles an hour. Some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed, fantastic technology to be sure, and totally silent. And this was for many, many hours, Jerry. We have reports, now that I've been out there, I've received thousands of emails already, that and certainly from number of people, there were reports as early as 5 p.m. and as late as 2 a.m. The bulk of the witness reporting to the news and so forth came in a little later, about 8 o'clock, between 8 and 11 o'clock, because that's when many people were outside looking up purposely at the sky to catch a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet. And this thing traversed the most populated corridor of Arizona, where the parades came through. The most populated corridor of Arizona. So whoever did this wanted to be seen. And what's really very important to note is not only did I capture the same formation again in the same location, by the time I got out there with my video camera, three had disappeared and there was three left, like a giant point, the end points of a giant triangle over the city. And I spoke with the air traffic controllers again the morning after the mass sighting, and they said to them it was the same thing in the same spot. Again, it did not show up on radar. It was in restricted airspace. So it's established with my data, the data speaks for itself, that these phenomena not only appeared in Phoenix, but also that I have documentation 2 months before the mass sighting and photographic documentation years before the mass sighting, because we went back to those pictures from 95 that I took. We then noticed that the same formation was in the same location again. And we're talking 2 months and 2 years before the supposed flare drop by the Merlin Air National Guard. They were only in town March 1st to the 15th. And I have no doubt that flares might have been sent out to divert attention away from the two unknowns, but that's not what we saw. And certainly not what went throughout the entire state of Arizona. So there's much more to the story than just March 13th, but just to be able to commemorate the 10th anniversary of what's now an historic sighting worldwide is such a thrill and an honor to be involved, because I did not want to come forward and stayed anonymous, as you know, for 7 years after I pushed my entire professional life aside for four to find a logical source of meaning for what I had witnessed and photographed, and have yet to find it. If anything, it opened up an entire new world to me, that because my work has been community education for 30 years on the reality of vital health issues, I felt obliged to share the reality of this vital issue as well.
Well, now, Dr. Lynn, you know, it's been 10 years, and I keep reading sightings reports from Phoenix. Things are still happening around there.
They are, but you have to be careful, and that was one of the reasons that I came forward, because, you know, there was no explanation, there was no investigation for 5 months. I mean, that we were being told when thousands of witnesses saw this thing and asked, you know, why isn't there an investigation? Something happened on March 13th. Oh, all planes were grounded by 8:30. Well, this went on for 5 months. And suddenly a USA Today article came out on June 18th, 97, that opened it up to international scrutiny. We were deluged by media from all over the world. And once we started talking to the witnesses, and this is very important to note too, because witness testimony, even though those things can be explained, there's a small percentage of things that cannot, and certainly what happened throughout the state on March 13, 1997, fits into that category. You know, they too. I mean, the witness reports were so detailed and so heartfelt. They were pounding the government and military for some kind of investigation, some kind of explanation. And then a month after that, suddenly they came up with the flare theory. And again, I don't doubt that there were flares sent off. We know that jets were sent out after this object that was hovering right over 7th Avenue and Indian School in the middle of Phoenix, about 8:20 or so. We have a crewman's taped report at the UFO Reporting Center with Peter Davenport that jets were sent out, and we also have witnesses that saw the jets being sent out on full blast. And as they got closer to the object, the object just blinked out. And his crewman goes on to say that he was one of the people to help one of the pilots out of his own aircraft because he was so shaken up by it. So the military was well aware that something was going on, and I've been told and the Operation Snowbird that they profess to be doing, if you really look into the meaning of that, it means diversionary tactical maneuver for UFO sightings. So if that is true, then I have no doubt that flares were sent off here and there, but that's not what we saw. And the data speaks for itself. Again, this isn't about me. It's about the data, and I got my own data out there without coming forward for 7 years. But it became clear that if I didn't step forward as someone of credence to say it's okay to talk about this and get this out in the open, it would have probably sat on a shelf. So here I am.
Well, you know, we're going to get into some more of that detail in a minute. We mentioned the fact that you're making lots of appearances in Phoenix this whole month, and I think down toward the end of the month, March 28th, you have something going on, don't you, with Phoenix Lights and a book signing?
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. My main purpose here is to educate, and you know, it's a choice whether you want to pick up the book or look at the documentary. But for the 10th anniversary, we certainly wanted to schedule some fun events to raise awareness and to educate the public. Last night, in fact, we opened an exhibit. The Anthropology Department actually requested that we join them in opening up an exhibit called Alien Photographs, and really looking at the photographs featuring the Phoenix Lights, and Wendell Stevens was kind enough to donate many pictures as well from many years past of unexplained aerial phenomena, and it was such a thrill. I mean, coming from an education background, particularly for youth, I mean, my programs are from K on through college, distributed by Discovery Education, and it's very dear to my heart to be able to really have a crowd there from the university, from Arizona State University, appreciate that there is something going on, and learning about it and opening their minds and their hearts to the possibility was such a thrill. And I'm also going to be presenting there. I have a presentation that I got together, a new PowerPoint presentation. It's pretty mind-boggling. I have an incredible collection of photographs, and in good conscience, I couldn't stick it in a drawer. I mean, that was a lot of soul-searching went on to come forward. But when you have this kind of data that speaks for itself and should be shared, how can you not? And so I've gotten a PowerPoint presentation together that actually shows the one picture that prompted me to come forward that I've never shared before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's called Coincidence or Communication, because too many things happened after the mass sighting that were just too serendipitous. Actually, even before, 6 months before the mass sighting, this is an interesting aside, I was asked to present my substance abuse prevention education program to the Gila Bend Indian Reservation School. They have one school there. And that happens to be situated in the basin between South Mountain and the Estrella Mountain Range. Well, Estrella means star in Spanish. That right away tells you that, how was that named? Star, okay, Estrella Mountain. And I didn't come to learn until after the mass sighting. I went back to them, and the door was open. They usually don't talk to the general public. And I asked, did anybody see the Phoenix Lights? And they started to laugh, and I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them light beings, sky people. They believe that they're part of their ancestry. It's part of their culture. I had no idea. I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all. And it wasn't until after the mass sighting, a week after, that I learned that this was happening worldwide. I mean, here was Jim Dellatoso, who I had no idea who he was until he was on the news, not only showing my footage, because again, I got my photographic data out there, but remained anonymous, and showing other amber orbs in triangle formations from all over the world. This is the first I heard of it. This is a week after the mass sighting. And that really took me back, because here now thousands of people had seen what I had been seeing and photographing, and certainly were concerned, alarmed, excited. I mean, it really touched people at a very, very deep level. We can get into that conversation, but because that really impressed me, it was one of the other reasons I came forward. But on the other side, I had no idea that other countries like Belgium, they had sightings in the early 90s, and they came to the United States and said, "Are you doing this?" And the United States flatly denied that we were. China has an elite group of scientists studying these phenomena. Japan built a museum, the government funded a museum to promote universal peace. That's a wonderful, beautiful message. And other countries as well. I mean, this has been happening worldwide for many years. So when you look at other countries and cultures right here that are open to these phenomena as being unearthly, and I've never said what they are, only that they are, and it's time we get them out, get this topic out in the open and address it and accept it and study it and move forward in our own evolution. And I think that's where we're going now. Just like when people thought there was a flat world, and it took time before people, it sunk in that we have a round world, and it took 17 centuries for human beings to realize with the advent of the microscope that there are zillions of tiny microorganisms all around us, even in our bodies. And just recently we learned that there's electromagnetic energy around every living cell that helped us develop the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging machine. Well, just because we can't see these tiny living entities or electromagnetic energies or gamma rays or radio waves, whatever, doesn't mean they're not real. We might just be looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency.
We will be right back, and I want to find out, obviously, your opinions have changed in 10 years. And we want to follow up just what you were talking about. So don't go away. We want to remind everybody that Phoenix Lights presentation will be at the Paradise Valley Community College Center for the Performing Arts. I think it's on 32nd Street, way out there, 18401 North 32nd in Phoenix. And the general admission for students is only
$5. Mm-hmm. So, at ASU on April the 11th. And this weekend, actually, we have a showing at the Barnes & Noble is sponsoring my presentation at the Mustang Library, which is near 90th Street and Via Linda. They're in the Phoenix area. And on Sunday, we'll be having three screenings of the new version of the documentary. It's been a work in progress, and we've revamped it quite a bit. We've added children. We have new sightings, new pictures that I'm sharing, because I do have some daytime pictures as well, which we can get into.
Well, good. We'll be right back to talk about some of that. And in addition to that, you know, I'm going to follow up the fact that this is nothing new to the Phoenix area. There've been history of Native Americans talking about these strange lights and those all kinds of drawings and things on mountain cliffs, on South Mountain for sure.
Oh, yeah, petroglyphs. And if anybody wants to take a look at some of the pictures that I've gathered, and also there's a wonderful Fox and MSNBC report on www.thephoenixlights.net, thephoenixlights.net.
And
it's fascinating.
And they need to... if they haven't seen your DVD, we have it for sale, and we have details about that coming up, too. Don't go away.
The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.
That's Tennessee Birdwalk.
Dr. Lynn, it's been a decade, and what's going on? Have you come to a conclusion yet about the Phoenix Lights?
You know, I've never said what they are, only that they are, and certainly we can speculate, but it seems reasonable only because my close sighting in 95 was just so, miraculous and extraordinary. I mean, it really was kind of technology that I never knew existed on Earth. So it wasn't until after the mass sighting that I realized this was happening worldwide for many, many years. In fact, we just had a witness forum at the Glendale City Hall last weekend, and a gentleman, 85-year-old gentleman, your young gentleman, from France, actually shared with the audience that he was a pilot in World War II, and these Foo Fighters, these amber orbs, the identical phenomena, were flying around their planes, and they thought that, you know, somebody had some spy technology, as did every other country, thought every other country had some kind of spy technology, and it wasn't until after the war that each side realized that nobody had this kind of spy technology. So they've been around a really long time, and the fact that we had this event that happened throughout the state, and seen by thousands of people that were purposely looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp comet, the bottom line is whoever did this wanted to be seen. And, and still today, I mean, we're not sure what it was or if it was a parade, but certainly it really woke people up that were open to it.
You know, one of the things I find interesting about it is the government's reaction, the Air Force's reaction,
the non-reaction.
Yeah, well, they kind of put a flare display on right away.
They didn't do it right away. Actually, when they came out with their announcement, and I have to share a personal conversation. I had called every military base here. I mean, I was really searching out a logical explanation for this. And I started out as a healthy skeptic. One must be open when you're in the medical profession to anything that walks through the door, non-judgmental. So I was open enough to say, hey, you know, show me what this is. But consistently, they were more curious about the pictures that I took than giving an explanation for it. And then I get a call a month after the USA Today article came out from the head of the head BR person at the Air National Guard, and she said to me, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. And I was excited. I was ready to hear. What was it? And she says, well, do you believe that for 5 months nobody looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard, and the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares, so that must be what some people saw. This is what she said to me. And I said, well, wait a minute. And she didn't know what I had, just that I had taken pictures. I said, well, were they in town 2 months before the mass sighting? And she said, no, they came in, you know, March 1st to the 15th. I said, well, I have pictures that show, that prove that whoever did this twice. I have the same formation in the same location. It was of this mile-wide formation of orbs, and it was confirmed the next morning by air traffic controllers who saw it, too, in restricted airspace. She said, you never told me that. And I said, besides that, and I had educated myself to flares, and I've gone on television several times to educate the Phoenix community, because it's important to know the difference between flares that drop and that drift with the wind, and that can't possibly keep a rock-solid formation like these phenomena were doing. And with smoke trails and so forth. And besides the fact that a group of flares could never, ever travel the entire state over many hours. So when you really, we see flares being dropped periodically. In fact, a few weeks ago, there were flare drops, very high altitude. Why was that? And it certainly, confuses people that don't have a trained eye. Was that the purpose? I don't know, but it was, you know, a month before the 10th anniversary, and it was just interesting and coincidental, and once again, that was happening. So, I'm thrilled that people are embracing not only the book, but also the documentary, and coming to the presentation so that they can learn.
When we talk about the recent sightings, I guess they're very similar to what happened back in 97 and 95.
Well, first of all, the recent sightings of the Phoenix Lights, the most recent for me was August 30th. But let me get back to the military, because after they came out with their announcement that it was flares, it was like, okay, if you did it, and obviously I have pictures that show that whoever did it twice before the mass sighting in the same location, do it again. Reenact it. Whoever did this obviously did it more than once, so do it again. Well, it wasn't only myself. It was a number of people were screaming for this, including Councilwoman Vice Mayor of Phoenix, Councilwoman Frances Emma Barwood, who was the only person in government who innocently, she didn't say anything, but she innocently, because she had so many of her constituents calling her, and we're talking over 1,000, calling, asking, why isn't there an investigation, why isn't there an explanation, and innocently, in a council meeting, she brought it up, and she said, you know, I've gotten a lot of calls, I have news people asking me, you know, what's going on here, maybe we should look into it, and she was plastered to the wall. I have to tell you, just criticized and ostracized, jokes made of her in the newspaper. It was not a pretty picture, what happened to people that came forward. I was very content being anonymous and just collecting my own data, which I did meticulously, by the way, Jerry. I went down to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, ASU Geology, Anthropology, Mathematics Department, Brooks Institute of Photography, asking them, please tell me what this is. Let's find out what this is. And across the board, not only don't we have the technology to definitively define what it is, we do have technology to rule out what it isn't. And when it came down to it, it's an unknown. I mean, it's just an unknown. At any rate, months passed and years passed. It wasn't until right before the third anniversary in 2000 of the mass sighting, on March 7th, was there a big announcement that 3 Air National Guards were coming into town. It was New York and Michigan and California, I believe, to show everybody the Phoenix Lights. Well, we were game. I mean, everybody was out there, media included, and witnesses with their cameras on ready. And I had heard that it was supposed to be a 2-week run. Well, by the second day, it was such a laughing stock. I mean, it was just so significantly different. You know, flares drift. They have smoke trails. They couldn't keep a formation. It has never been reenacted in 10 years. So that's saying something.
Yeah, Larry Dickham, my executive producer, and I have discussed that. For no other reason, why wouldn't they duplicate it if they could?
Right, exactly. And they tried. That was their shot. I mean, they announced it. It was headlines in the paper and on the radio that they were doing this. And everybody was ready for them. And it really, you know, they made a valiant effort, I guess, but certainly for the witnesses and the media. I mean, you could just tell immediately they tried to make a triangle. It was upside down. It fell apart right away. And if you get on my website, thephoenixlights.net, you can take a look at that in the MSNBC report. The data speaks for itself. And that's why I'm here, Jerry, just to say, you know, hey, the data was collected. I had a 750-page journal 4 years later and had to decide what I was going to do with all that data. And we're talking the history of these things. They mentioned Foo Fighters, but it goes way beyond that. I mean, way beyond World War II. I mean, we have documentation from the time human documentation started. I mean, we had drawings in primitive caves in Pakistan of what we would call UFOs today. Where did they get that idea? Unless they had seen something and drew what they saw. As well as 17th and 18th century paintings and the Bible, certainly. There's many examples. But so, you know, when you really look at the whole picture, not only is it fascinating, but you know, you see that this has been around for a long, long time, and our culture, has really disregarded and even ostracized talking about this. So, you know, if I can be a credible voice out there, like I said, I did not want to come forward. But, you know, it gets to the point that you have to decide what to do with what you have. And in good conscience, as an educator for 30 years, it was just too important not to share.
We, you know, talking about the Air Force and the government and their reactions, I'm not sure if they know much more than we do.
Well, you know what? God bless them. They have a job to do. And I really don't get involved with bashing or conspiracy things, whatever. I mean, that, you know, it just is not productive. What's productive is actually getting the data that we do know out there. People can decide for themselves. And it speaks for itself. To date, I mean, I've had no one give me an explanation for what these things are.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Don't forget, we're going to tell you how to get the documentary and the book, too, as well. Are you doing anything new, or are you still...
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, the documentary that you have, Jerry, is the original, now collector's item. We only made a certain amount because this has been a work in progress for the last couple of years. We finished the documentary in October with new sightings. We've put children in it. It's a little bit different than the original. In fact, there's even more. It's longer. The original is a little longer. We revamped it. But certainly the foundation of it is there. So the DVD that you have available on your site is really the original collector's item. And as long as they last, they'll be available. The ones that we're screening for only screening, and we are looking for a distributor. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get the new one out there as well. But I don't know when. So, you know, for now, that's what's available, and people have really been embracing it and enjoy it and learning from it, and that's a good thing.
We'll be right back, folks. Don't go away.
Do you have a problem with mold or mildew in your home? Well, listen to this. We have found a product you will love. Moldzyme, an effective non-toxic mold and mildew cleaner. Moldzyme is the cleaner, greener way to remove mold and mildew stains. This is a line of completely non-hazardous, non-toxic, and environmentally safe products that gets rid of mold and mildew stains quickly, easily, and safely. Moldzyme contains no chlorine or ammonia, is non-hazardous and hypoallergenic, safe on wood, concrete, and brick, inside or outside your home. Moldzyme eliminates odors and is fragrance-free, an all-natural and environmentally safe way to remove mold and mildew stains that really work. See the complete line of products by clicking on one of the Moldzyme banners located throughout our website. You'll be glad you did.
And we're talking about the Phoenix Lights, 10 years of the anniversary, but as Dr. Lynn said, it actually started earlier than that. You have pictures from 95. And you've talked to a lot of witnesses over the last 10 years. What kind of effect do these sightings have with witnesses? I know generally UFO sightings can be life-changing.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. You know, being an experiencer myself, I certainly have empathy for those out there that have had a strange, anomalous experience that's real to them, and not being able to share it is very detrimental, actually. I've had hundreds and hundreds of emails since I came forward with the book in 04. Because I pared down that 750 pages to the best of what I found. And over again, just having someone of credence say it's okay to talk about it is very healing. That's a very important part of the position why I came forward, just to get it out in the open and be able to say, hey, you know, it's okay to talk about it, even if it can be explained. If it's real to you, it's very cathartic to be able to share. The other thing that really piqued my interest when I was interviewing witnesses and took me on to a new road of inquiry was many of the witnesses had a near-death experience as children that was reawakened by the Phoenix Lights event. And I found that very curious because I also had a near-death experience as a child when I was 8 years old, and I go into that in the book in detail. But the important thing is that it really... alerted me to the fact that, whoa, maybe there is a connection between all unexplained phenomena, be it near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience. And lo and behold, again, I mean, I knew nothing about this topic to start out with, and when I went in this direction, I was finding university studies for 20, 30 years. Dr. Kenneth Ring at the University of Connecticut, his Omega Project, Dr. Bruce Tremblo, Dr. Raymond Fowler, Dr. Bruce Grayson. I mean, there were a number of professors at university level that were studying the connection, not only in the experience itself, and it's intriguing just to see how similar the experiences are when you really lay them out, and I do that in the book, but what was most profound to me, and actually maybe come up with the name, Unexplained Phenomena, a UP, an up, because it is an up. There is such a, for those that experience it, and let's say right up front, I mean, there are people out there that forgot about it, forgot about the sighting for months until they saw something on TV. There were others that just disregarded it and couldn't deal with it, and that's okay. I mean, if one needs to feed into a logical explanation like flares or whatever, so be it, if it gives them comfort. Everyone in their own time. But those that were really open to it and embraced it, and I, over and over again, I had witnesses tell me, I was in awe. I felt that I was blessed to be able to see this. I mean, it really touched people at such a deep soul level, and the positive after effect as well. Many people here were so curious, and it really opened their minds and their hearts to the fact that we're not alone, that whoever is doing this is not only alerting us to their presence worldwide, but also waking us up to the spiritual beings that we are, and the potential, the positive potential that we have is so much more vast than we had ever imagined, and the connectedness to the universe as well as to the earth and each other is extremely intricate and intimate and important. And you know, there's a message that people have been getting worldwide, not only to wake up to the presence of these visitations and that we're not alone in the universe, but also that wake up to what you're doing to yourself and to your earth before it's too late.
A lot of people have, you know, put forth the idea that these sightings, these mass sightings especially, are to alert us about our environment.
Right, right. And I'm telling you, I mean, I over and over and over again, I mean, I've talked to the witnesses from Arizona that witnessed the Phoenix Lights event that have become vegetarians. We have one wonderful lady, Terry Mansfield, in the documentary, who contacted me. She had to see me. She had to meet with me and tell me her experience. She ended up to be one of the witnesses that we share in the documentary. She was with a group of hospice workers. She was a hospice worker, and they were outside. There were about a dozen people outside, and this thing was hovering right above them. I mean, it was massive and touched them. I mean, these were people that were sensitive anyway. You know, when you look at a situation, and we talk about this in the documentary. The documentary is really an overview of the topic. The book gets into a lot more of the story. There's much more to the story than just March 13th. But certainly to introduce the public in a gentle way to this whole thing, you know, we tried to share the witnesses and the professors I worked with and how Hollywood looks at this, as well as the fear factor, because we're so ingrained with that it's a threat, and that we're going to be harmed. And there has not been one report. This is really interesting. Not one report in 10 years of harm, threat, or abduction connected with the Phoenix Lights event. But anyway, Terry, in the meantime, has become the CEO for the Department of Peace, the Arizona Department of Peace, which is now a ground roots effort, non-political. It's a ground roots effort for peace on Earth and peace in space. And she is a very strong advocate and traveling to Washington, D.C. all the time. I mean, it changed her life. I mean, in the process of the last 10 years, she has become a very, very strong voice for peace and you know, starting at a grassroots level in schools, which is wonderful. I mean, it has changed people. people and transform people for the better. So whoever's doing this, yay.
Yeah, we hear these stories, as you do, off and on, regularly over the years. It definitely changes people's attitudes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to know, I mean, look, Jerry, the Hubble telescope has really changed the face of time and space and gravity as we know it. It's shown us just in the short 10 or 15 years that it's been out there that our solar system is a very young solar system. Our galaxy, and who knows how many trillions of galaxies there are out there. Our galaxy, with over 400 billion stars, is 10 to 14 billion years old. Our solar system is a very young solar system. It's only 4 to 6 billion years old. There are scientists now postulating that there could be intelligent, sentient beings out there, billions of years ahead of us. That's mind-boggling what they might be able to do, particularly, you know, the debunkers or the skeptic, you know, hardline skeptics for so many years have said, how could they get here? It's too far, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, what if, and certainly my experience in 95 with the close orb indicated as much, because when they disappeared right in front of my eyes, it seemed that they were still there, even though they had disappeared,
mm-hmm.
gone to another dimension. That was the only thing I could relate it to. I mean, we have no reference for this in our culture. But if you really think about now, astrophysics and quantum physics and mechanics is showing us that there are many dimensions out there. And if there's many dimensions out there, there could be many intelligences out there that we just don't see in our time and space unless we get a glimpse of them from these experiences or if they want us to. So,
You know, you're right about all of that, and it is mind-boggling. It's hard to for me to comprehend, and I'm sure for everybody.
It's the kind of consciousness and the thinking that is going forward. We have other movies like What the Bleep Do We Know that's introducing this kind of thought process that, you know, if there are other dimensions out there, how much easier it would be to imagine that there are other life forms in other dimensions. And when we hear over and over again that people will be seeing beings or spirit world or whatever coming through the walls or disappearing right in front of them, then we can kind of relate. Well, you know what? Maybe that can happen. Maybe there's a way, if they're that much more advanced than we are, that they have found to do that. And maybe all these sightings and the increase in experiences and sightings worldwide are trying to wake us up once and for all. It's like, you know, we've gotten so far away from our spiritual source and from who we really are in our crazed world today and busy world today that we've gotten away from all that. And certainly whoever's doing this is trying to wake us up to that. So, and hopefully, you know, they're touching one person at a time doing this, you know, just gliding across rooftops throughout cities, major cities worldwide. There was actually a very similar sighting, mass sighting, 1 month before ours. I learned about a year after I started looking meticulously into other data, and in St. Petersburg, Russia, on February 19th, 1997. And a couple people got video, which are identical. It's identical to what I captured 2 months before the mass sighting. So, I mean, these things are happening worldwide. People now have the technology, which we didn't before, to capture them. It was always just a story, which could be discarded or dismissed or ignored. Now we have people actually out there with cameras here. That's another thing I should mention, which is so neat. Here in the Phoenix area, that there were people that actually moved here. We have a Luke Air Force gentleman who actually asked for a transfer to Phoenix a year after the mass sighting so he could see these phenomena. He was so curious about them, and he's been photographing them.
You know, you're right. I know several people that moved to Phoenix because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran across when I was in Phoenix investigating this.
Right, and they're out there with their cameras, which is so great because, you know, if you look, you'll find, and just as I did, I mean, I found a whole new world that I didn't even know was right there. when I started looking for it. But if you really look skyward, and most of us don't, I mean, we're not looking at the sky all day long, and certainly you don't want it to become obsessed and look at it, you know, sit there with a camera for your life. But you know, there are people here that are going out periodically, and they are catching these things. And also, which I'm sure your listeners will appreciate, and you as well. Once you really open yourself up to these things, and I call my presentation, my PowerPoint presentation, coincidence or communication, because there's too many things, and I leave it to the audience to decide, but there were so many puzzle pieces and too many things that were just so serendipitous right before these lights appeared, that you start wondering, is there some kind of communication going here, telepathic communication? And yes, I mean, there are people that have been with their cameras here sitting outside and inviting these things in. I won't go there. I've been asked to do that, but to me that's a circus act, personally. But there are people that choose to do that, and they've actually caught wonderful pictures of these phenomena. So is there true communication once you open up to these things and open up to the reality that they're there? In fact, I have, okay, I'm just sharing it for the first time. I have a couple of pictures that I took in 2000, November and December. We have beautiful sunsets here. I collect sunsets. I have 5 books of beautiful sunsets. And when I got the film back after the holidays, 5 rolls of film, I noticed in 2 different rolls, 2 different months, there is an object that looks like a rod-shaped object, a giant rod-shaped object in the same location in the sky. And in one of the sunsets, a later picture of that sunset shows this object that looks like a rod, like what we call a mothership or...
Yes,
It looks like it turned so that it's a triangle. So could this triangle craft be there? I didn't see it when I took the picture. I did not see when I took the pictures of the sunset, but they're in the negative. And it's mind-boggling when you think the Internet has definitely changed the face of sightings, because now, at a moment, we can let people know that we're having something happen here. and certainly, it got our sighting out in a big way. And we're just excited that we can celebrate the 10th anniversary. It is definitely an historic event, and it's still unexplained.
We have one more segment with Dr. Lynn. Don't go away. When we come back, I want to talk to her about the reality of the sightings. There are all kinds of stories. I want to find out, was it boomerangs? Was it a mile and a half wide triangle? What was the sightings exactly? Hey, have I got an idea here, and I would like to follow it up with especially grandparents, or maybe your new parent, the new baby coming. Is it a boy? Is it a girl? What the future will bring? It's all of that anticipation and excitement of a new member of the family can be captured forever. Listen to this. This is a great idea. We represent an astrologer, C.C. Stevens, who's really unique. And she has something called the Book of You. For $35, you have to have the name of the person, the location where they were born, and the date, and the exact time. And you submit that to C.C. And basically, in a couple of days, we'll put it in the mail. You'll get a little CD back about the Book of You. What a great idea for a newborn child. All of the astrological information laid out for that new member of the family. A great gift idea, don't you agree? C.C. Steven, she has an ability that is almost unexplainable, but she's right on. Trust me. Dr. Lynn, we've heard reports of this huge triangle. We've heard reports of a boomerang. What did people really see?
That's a very good question. We're not sure, because there may have been actually a parade going throughout Arizona of different things, or could have been one thing that could have morphed, because we had a report at 8:20 was the first call into a retired police officer in Paulden, who reported this mile-wide V formation of lights that, again, seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it's attached to. And if you go on my website, thephoenixlights.net, You can see the second picture there, and that was the series of six that I took 2 months before the mass sighting. That's a very, very poignant picture, because if you look at that picture, you can see as this thing was head-on turning into a V-shape. By the way, the second picture, which is not on my web, shows five lights across with two underneath it, and many people throughout the state on March 13th described five lights in a V formation with two trailing, and some actually saw the lights redock with the main object, and others saw it go out, you know, a couple of orbs go out into the environment and then come back to it. Is that what happened in 95? I don't know, but the same formation's in the background when we had our close sighting. But at any rate, other people, if you look at that one picture that I had, the second picture that I have on the website, you can see that every other orb is bigger, and I call them orbs because the light did not extend outside the edge. It was self-contained, and when you look at these orbs through a telescope or binoculars, it's like a spinning ball of energy. They're self-contained, and they don't glare at all, and they don't illuminate anything like flares do. But at any rate, you can see that every other one is bigger than the one in between. So if you can imagine that this thing was head-on and then turned into a V-shape, turning to the right, and that we're looking at the bigger orbs are the closer arm of this thing, and the further away orbs are smaller, and that there was a field in between these orbs, that makes sense. Some people actually saw a craft. Some people, we have a couple that was out in Carefree, very credible reality couple, were out in Carefree at where there were stakes in the ground for a development that they were working on. And this thing passed right over them. They said that it was closer to 2 miles wide, as indicated by these stakes. And they actually saw windows on this craft, and beings at the windows looking down at them as intently as they were looking at the beings, which is really interesting. So, and then, as I said, at 8:20, the first call came in from Paulden. Well, around that same time, unless it, like, miraculously sped up and got here, that's when the crewman says that this thing was over 7th Avenue and Indian School. So it makes one wonder, either it was such incredible technology that it could be two places almost at the same time, or was it a number of different things, because then other people saw a boomerang shape. We have reports of it going past the moon, and you could see it was kind of translucent. We have other reports that people were right under the lights. Actually, the lights were huge. They were like 6 feet across, and they looked like we talk about this, and a couple of the witnesses talk about it in the documentary. It looked like a canister where the light was like swimming around, and in between these lights, it looked like there was like a watery, shimmery feeling. So, whether it was one thing that they could materialize into a craft, or it was a number of different things, we don't know that for sure.
Now,
but the reports do vary.
You're in Phoenix, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I think these lights were seen all over the state, right?
Yeah, not only all over the state. I mean, we're talking from up north all the way through the most populated corridor, while thousands of people were looking up at the Hale-Bopp Comet, and that's significant. So obviously whoever did this wanted to be seen. And if it was military, people have said, well, you know, what if it was military? They've had secret ops and so forth. Well, that's concerning that they would do that when a night when everybody was outside looking up and then deny it. But besides that,
right.
It came all the way down to Tucson and then came back to Phoenix. That was the biggest part of the sighting, and that's when most people were outside looking up at the sky. So that's when the reports came in fast and furious. But we also, since I came forward, I've had reports from people that were seeing it earlier that evening, actually in New Mexico.
Oh, really?
That we're seeing in New Mexico. And later that night, in fact, I had a gal call me, a commercial airline pilot, just got in touch with me a couple months ago. Fascinating. And people are still getting in touch with me. It's really amazing that it's really opening up people to be able to talk about their experience now. And she was on a route to California, passing near Las Vegas when she saw this thing about 11:30 at night, And she called into the tower to ask them if there was anything on their radar, which there wasn't. And at about the same time, another commercial pilot, a gentleman, called in really freaking out that he was seeing this thing. And then they passed that area. About a half hour later, this is interesting, about a half hour later, an Air Force jet comes almost right next to them, this is a commercial airline, freaked the passengers and as well as the crew, and started sending off flares.
Really?
Yeah. What's that about?
Yeah, right.
So, and she just got in touch with me a couple months ago, and she said, look, I just had to tell you that this happened. So, you know, and we have other reports from people that were seeing these orbs statewide until about 2 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, there was a lot going on that night. There was definitely a parade happening.
Have you thought about the Hale Bopp connection? We hear all kinds of stories. Basically, I guess you feel kind of like I do. People were just out looking for the comet and saw it. Or do you think there's something else going on we don't know about?
What do you mean?
Well, that's a good answer.
No, what do you mean?
You know, in other words, did this comet have something to do with all of this, too?
Or? Well, I think, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, actually, because, you know, let's look back in Mexico, who actually started their mass sightings when there was an eclipse in 1991. And, you know, hundreds, thousands of people were outside looking up at the sky again at the eclipse. You know, whoever's doing this, do they know when these events are happening? And they kind of schedule a mass sighting so that people become aware that they're here in a gentle way. You know, that's a good question. That's a very good question. So, you know, the fact is that night, I mean, people were outside doing a lot of things. We have March is a lovely time here. And the beginning of March and the evenings here now are just spectacular. And a lot of people are outside anyway.
Yeah, I understand that.
You know, it's a good question because when I met with Jaime Muson, you know, again, I stayed anonymous, but on the fly, when I could, because gathering the information, I met with some of the key people and communicated with certainly, you know, experts in the field, including Jaime Muson. And when he saw my data, he looked at me and he said, you know, you have a lot more in store. This is just the beginning. And, you know, you certainly see, and then with the Mexico sightings, and just recently, I think it was 2004, that goes back again to the interdimensional significance of this. The Air Force took infrared film of these orbs, the same thing, the same orbs, and actually they look very similar to what we had here. And the Air Force, I mean, you know,
shared
it with Jaime, and he shared it with the world, and they didn't see them. They were on infrared film. So, you know, I just don't think we have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are. And maybe, you know, just like my son said pictures, we just don't see these things in our human containers. When I was working, I went back to work as chief clinical consultant at the Arizona Heart Institute Wellness and Imaging Center, doing the heart test, the calcium scores of the major arteries of the heart, and then afterwards people would meet with me to talk about nutrition and exercise, and the first thing I would say to them when they came in is, you know, this is your container for your lifetime. And they would look at me and they said, wow, I never thought of it that way. I said, you know, what you put into it or don't, is your choice, but there is a formula to stay healthy. Well, besides that, this is our container. I mean, we are limited in what we can see and hear, and as we know, dogs hear a lot more than we do, and other animals as well. You know, so we're limited in the fact that maybe they're right there. We're just not seeing them unless we're invited.
Our time is almost up, and that's a good way to end the show, but I have to ask you, anybody have contact with any sort of beings or unusual things, spirits or whatever, during this time?
Actually, that is a good question. As I said, I haven't had any reports of threat or harm or abduction, anything like that. There's certainly People feel a connection to the phenomena. People wanted to have a connection to the phenomena. When the mass sighting happened about 6 months before the movie Independence Day came out, and so children who saw this massive thing coming towards them were frightened.
Yeah, they thought it was Independence Day.
They were jumping up and down. Independence Day, Independence Day. I had some reports. But what's really interesting is as this came close to them, and we're talking going over people's heads, I mean, at a very low altitude, not only children but adults felt a connection to it, felt a wonder with what was happening. And after it passed, the children wanted to chase after it and wanted their parents to get in the car and continue chasing it. Very interesting, very intriguing circumstance.
In other words, it's more of an emotional or another dimension, so to speak.
To the core, it really touches our, because we don't have any relation to it. We've been so ingrained that this isn't real, that it's liberish or it's mirage or whatever. And again, other cultures are open to this. It's part of their culture. It's a natural part of who they are. And you asked about spirit world. Maybe this is spirit world. I actually, for the first time, I'm sharing pictures in my presentation of evidence, as much evidence as proof as you can get that there's a spirit world. I have unbelievable photographs of spirit world that maybe there is a connection here. Maybe this is all spirit world.
It seems like it's all intertwined somehow.
And again, in the book, I really get into the intricacies of the connection between all unexplained phenomena. But if you think about it for a second, and you think about and I'm not saying that it is spirit world, I'm just saying it could be one of the things, or time travelers or whatever, but, you know, if you think, if there is a spirit world, how advanced that spirit world must be. And, you know, with the minds that have gone to that dimension, be it, you know, Einstein to Tesla to Socrates, whatever, and what if they're watching us, and they're intimately involved with our own survival, and they're trying to wake us up in a way that won't freak us out. How would they do that? Well, maybe this is the way, or maybe it's a combination. I don't know for sure, but certainly I do think that there's some kind of a connectedness there that we should explore.
Well, Dr. Lim, we'll be back in touch with you again soon, and I wish I could be out there on the 17th or the 28th or whenever, but
yeah, I wish you could too. They're really, really fun, and hopefully we'll be taking it on the road soon. I did present in Italy last year with Paula Harris and Jaime. That was really fun, and there's so much more to this story, and I think there's so much more to come as well, and I'm along for the ride, and it's just been a joy talking with you, and hopefully people will just look at the data. It speaks for itself, and I've tried to do the homework for everybody. There definitely is a chunk of history missing from our history books, and with the book and the documentary, I hope I can help fill that gap a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Major sighting here.
On the 13th of March.
Weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently.
And no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now,
suddenly six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw a series of strange bright lights seen over the skies of Arizona. I guess a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing new.
Award-winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kita, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from shotjerrypippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited.